today. I really only have one point today. Naturally, I'm going to take you all around Robin Hood's barn to get there. It does have to do with the Sabbath and the feast, and it's hard to believe at this point that the feast is barely a month away. When we look at both of them, though, Sabbath and Feast of Tabernacles, they declare the same thing. They declare a rest. With the weekly Sabbath, a rest from your week's labor. But the millennium will be 1,000 years of peace and rest for a war-torn world. So our weekly Sabbath, while it points back to creation, also points forward to that. And it's something to keep in mind during the weeks leading up to the feast and during the feast, the aspects of peace and of rest. We'll have a part, as hard as it is to see it right now because we're so much a product of this world, that we'll have a part with Jesus in healing this planet, in helping it to learn what rest really is. Question is, do we know what rest really is? We are products of this world, and we're in a hurry along with this world. We can get caught up in it very easily. You can't get on the freeway and decide to go 30 just because you feel like it. You have to dive in. In the Psalms and elsewhere in the Bible, in fact, it's used no less than 73 times in the Bible, there's a rather obscure word, and we read it, we see it, we look over it usually, and it's not even translated per se in the Bible. The word is Selah. It means basically to stop, pause, and consider. In the Psalms, it was given as an instruction to the musicians or to the singers, and it was basically saying, all right, certain verses have gone by, now let's pause and consider what we just heard. And that word, Selah, pause, consider, in the rush of our lives, it can help us to understand and celebrate the Sabbath and the Feast of Tabernacles far better than we otherwise would. It's a constant reminder, the Sabbath each week and the feast each year, to pause and consider. What are we a part of? Where are we going? Is this merely a religious exercise, or is this a future reality? All the holy days up until the fall festival have come to pass. Passover, Pentecost, giving of God's Spirit, trumpets, the fall feast, that lies ahead of us, and it's just as real. It may not seem it with the pressures of our lives, but that will come. It's so important to God, the keeping of the feast, and resting for the world, that he says through Zechariah that in the millennium, any nation that fails to keep the feast will receive a punishment. That makes it pretty important. How important is rest to us in this frenetic world? As I said earlier, we are trapped by many lifestyles in this world, and it's easy to get on that speeding freeway and not even know that we're trapped in it. We just rush from thing to thing. Even the feast has been celebrated that way too often, that we rush from activity to activity and the feast is gone and we wonder, what was it for? What did we learn? It's not a new phenomenon. Back in 1830, some engineers got together in New York State, created something that came to be called the Erie Canal, running basically from Lake Erie in the west to the Hudson River in the east, and providing a way of commerce to get to New York City easier than overland. It was done simply by putting goods and whatever services they had on barges that were towed by mules tethered to the shore. And we all know what a blistering pace a mule is going to walk, especially towing a barge. The interesting thing is that the residents along the Erie Canal were up in arms over it. They said that this new mode of living increases the pace of life to an unacceptable level. Now, I don't know what would happen if we grabbed them, pulled them into this world today, right behind the wheel of a speeding auto at 65 down the freeway. They'd probably die of terror before they had an accident. Only 100 years later, because that was at the beginning of the Industrial Revolution back then, only 100 years later, this country had become so addicted to speed and the rush of life that one editorial in a national magazine in 1931, so this language is going to be a little dated, it read like this. We, in our rush towards God knows what, acquire or spend our earthly span trying to acquire wealth, culture, fame, luxury, scientific efficiency, and more wealth. We surround ourselves with telephones, tickers, jazz orchestras, subways, bootleg gin, dress clothes, taxicabs, motor parkways, science, glittering hotels, psychoanalysis, alarm clocks, 40,000 brands of phony religion, squawking movie palaces, nickel in the slots of orbs. We call it civilization, but we know darn well there's something wrong with it. The world recognizes it without recognizing it. And we know it very well. Some people have been called upon, I'm not a fan of poetry per se, but some people have been called upon to write this out, and I tripped over a poem some years ago, and I'll have a qualification for this poem when I'm done, but it says something about this subject of the hurry of our lives and how it can afflict us. It says, Lord, please slow us down. We take our families for granted and save no time to talk to children or walk through woods enchanted. There was a time when we found time to wade in mountain streams and picnic till the stars came out. Lord, give us back our dreams. Seeking a living, we've missed the life. And trapped in this frantic pace, we leave no time for art and music, and nature has lost its place. We have no time to view sunsets or glimpse eternal hills or watch a spider weave a web or hike through streams and fields. To watch purple martins returning, to write love notes, to read, to pray. Lord, that's what life is all about. Please slow us down today. Now, the only qualification to that is that it tends to put on God the responsibility to slow us down. And that's our choice. That's something we have to decide to do. We're swimming upstream in this world as it is. God, especially with the Sabbath and with the Feast of Tabernacles, says, step aside. Pause and consider where you're going and what we're a part of. Jesus gave us that example. He escaped into the wilderness. That's recorded many times in the Gospels. He went to commune with his Father in a place he knew he would not be assaulted by the constant rush of his world and the demands placed on him. He knew, and he had the fullness of God's Spirit, he knew he needed that time of silence to set aside. But how do we find that? What do we need? In 1 Kings 19, the story is given of Elijah running for his life from Queen Jezebel. And when, so to speak, God finally caught up with him, he surrounded him with fire and fury. And by the time he had him humbled enough, I imagine, he came to him instead, as the King James puts it, in a still, small voice. The original language takes that a little further. It means a quiet, gentle, calm voice. And one writer put it this way. Only apart from the rush and busyness of normal everyday living is it possible to hear the still small voice, the quiet, calm voice of our God, and to find the strength to go on. It becomes an increasingly hard choice in this world to stop, pause, and consider. The Bible tells us repeatedly to seek peace. And we often think of that verse in terms of peace among the nations, peace in the world, and so forth. But the deeper meaning within the word itself means to be at peace. And that's emphasized further in the New Testament and elsewhere by repeated scriptures that also say to rest ourselves on God, to cast our burdens on Him, to let go of those things that are constantly working on us, knowing whose hands we're really in, and knowing that He is working out the ending. It's something that we can choose to do if we can detach ourselves from the rush of everyday life. So what's that one point I talked about earlier? A plea, or a suggestion if you prefer, at this Feast of Tabernacles, if you haven't discovered the secret already, set aside some time to do absolutely nothing. It doesn't matter if it's 5 minutes a day, an hour a day, every other day, with your family, alone, in a hotel room, top of a mountain, seashore, it doesn't matter. There's no formula for it. We each have to find our own way to stop, pause, consider, to hear that still small voice, to hear our God. The feast is given as a celebration. That's part of the command, to enjoy ourselves, but not at the exclusion of remembering the deeper purposes and being able to hear God. And this world tries its very best to keep us from hearing that voice. We can notice in almost any circumstance, it doesn't matter where we are or what time of the year it is, what God has given us. It surrounds us if we have the eyes to see it. The blessings are there even in the midst of the deepest problems that we have. I have one more editorial to read. And it speaks to this. It speaks to our relationship with God and to the feast. Important perspectives can be gained by gazing at the night sky, or by examining a flower, or by using a finger to trace the veins of a leaf. When we look at nature, we can see so much more than scenery. As poet Elizabeth Barrett Browning observed, earth cramped with heaven and every common bush afire with God. But only he who sees takes off his shoes. Even nature's most ordinary scenes can teach and inspire us if we'll only pause to observe them. Far too often, earth's natural beauty goes unnoticed because it's too close and too constant to command our attention. In the words of Emerson, if the stars should appear only one night in 1,000 years, how would men believe and adore and preserve for many generations the remembrance of the city of God which had been shown? If, as poets and prophets have observed, all things denote there is a God, then the way we look at the universe and the earth, the animals and the people who populate it, defines our relationship with God. When we consider the flowers of the field, we're not only learning about nature, we're also learning about ourselves. Like the leaves and the stars, there are changing seasons and constant patterns in our own lives. As we walk through our daily lives considering the flowers of the field or the stars in the night sky, God is near. His name is written in those sparkling stars. His love is reflected by the morning dew. His presence is whispered in the rustle of autumn leaves. Our appreciation of nature is most complete when we recognize the hand of the divine creator and his masterpieces that fill every meadow, every river, and every hour. By observing nature's shifting scenes, we learn that when life gives us winter or shadows or wind, it's also offering us the chance to become men and women with faith for all seasons. Though sometimes wearied and worn, we can learn to see beyond the wind and the weather and glimpse in nature the creator of all things. The weekly Sabbath, and right now I'm speaking more specifically of the upcoming feast, gives us this time. We step aside from our lives, whether we're attending a feast site or can't attend a feast site. It's a time to consider things far deeper and grander than we normally do in just our everyday lives. The Sabbath each week reminds us of the Sabbath yet to come. And the feast is that 1,000-year Sabbath. Together they declare where we are and where we're going. For that day will come, as hard as it is to imagine, as I said earlier, in the midst of our problems, we sit in physical bodies with physical problems, and it's hard to picture an ideal world in the middle of this one. But the day will come that Jesus spoke of in Matthew 25. When he said, then the king, speaking of himself, will say to those on his right hand, speaking of us, come, you blessed of my Father, inherit the kingdom that has been prepared for you. Prepared for you from the foundation of the world. That's where we're going. Selah.